And we're back here in Unusual Sources, 93.3 CFMU-FM, broadcasting to Hamilton at 93.3 on the FM dial, and the rest of the world at cfmu.mcmaster.ca. And I think the Middle East is going to be a major focus of coverage for the next few weeks, next few months. A lot of very serious things happening, and people want to know more. And it's our job to provide education. And I'm very pleased to say today we're going to be bringing on one of our most knowledgeable commentators about Middle East and Central Asian affairs. And of course, I'm speaking with editor of Crescent International, which is Crescent Online, Crescent-Online, and that is Zafar Bengash. So, Zafar, thanks very much for being on the program with us today.
Hello, Brendan. It's my great pleasure to be with you.
Well, you know, you're a sophisticated and cultured person, so you probably know there's an old saying, which is Americans learn geography through war. And, you know, I think Americans learned a few new words today, Kobani, for example. Perhaps they've learned about the existence of a group of people, the Kurds, who many millions of Americans may not have been familiar with. But that's been in the news lately. We broadcast an interview about it last week, and the situation continues to develop. And it's tied to our own country's policies. So I was wondering if you could maybe, for our listeners, we may not be as familiar with the issue as other audiences, but in the Middle East, in a number of countries, Turkey, Syria, and other countries, you have a population of Kurdish people, and they have a number of different groups and alliances and so on. And I'm wondering if you could maybe start us out by giving us a breakdown or telling us about some of the different groups or the Kurdish groups that are involved in all these affairs that are happening right now.
Sure. First of all, I think it would be helpful if we were to identify the area that the Kurdish population, which is altogether about 30 million people, that they occupy in that part of the world. There is the Kurds are spread across four or five countries. They are in Syria, they are in Turkey, they are in Iraq, as well as in Iran, and a few sort of smaller percentage of Kurds can also be found further north in the Caucasus region, but their numbers over there are insignificant. The bulk of the Kurds, of course, are in Turkey. And in Turkey, the group that leads them is referred to as the PKK. And this is the Kurdistan Workers' Party, whose leader, Abdullah Öcalan, is currently under arrest by the Turkish government, because Öcalan has been fighting for many years, or the Kurds, in fact, in Turkey have been fighting for many years to secure recognition for themselves as Kurds, as Kurdish people. And of course, when the present government, led by President Recep Tayyip Erdogan, came to power back in 2002, they recognized the Kurds as a separate entity and also recognized the teaching of Kurdish language in various schools. So this is one major group that is in Turkey. Now you have Kurds also in Syria, and of course we are hearing about Kobani, which is in the news because there is fighting going on. I will come to that in a minute. I just want to touch on the Kurds in Iraq as well as in Iran. Now, we don't hear anything about the Kurds in Iran because over there the situation is quite normal. They are being treated well. They have no difficulties or problems. They have Kurdish officials running their own affairs in the Kurdish regions of Iran, so there is no problem there. But there is a serious situation in Iraq as well, which is another part of the West's agenda, and that is to divide Iraq into three ethnic states. And Kurdistan, since the U.S. invasion and occupation of Iraq in 2003, the Kurdistan of Iraq has, in fact, had de facto independence. And now it is becoming more and more established when the part of Iraqi Kurdistan over the years has been making direct deals with other countries, particularly with Turkey, with respect to oil contracts and so on, bypassing the central government in Baghdad. And the other two portions of Iraq that the Americans, and in fact U.S. Vice President Joe Biden has talked about it, it was also mentioned along the same time by an American strategist by the name of Colonel Rolf Peters. He actually talked about blood borders in the Middle East, and he talked about dividing Iraq into three ethnic states. So you would have the Kurds in the north, then you would have the Iraqi Sunnis in the middle, which is now the area controlled by ISIS, the group that calls itself by that name, and then you have the Iraqi Shias in the south. So that is the division that is planned for Iraq, and it appears as if that is on track because of Western interference, as well as the various reactionary regimes in the Middle East, regimes like those in Saudi Arabia, in Qatar, United Arab Emirates, Jordan, and so on, that are involved in instigating trouble in that region. Now, I said I'll come back to the situation in Syria, because for the last 3 years, there has been an uprising in Syria, but all the evidence that we have gathered indicates that it is neither an indigenous uprising, nor is it popularly based inside Syria. In fact, there are mercenaries from at least 80 countries that have flooded into Syria from all over the world, from the Caucasus region, from Iraq, from Pakistan, from Afghanistan, as far afield as Indonesia, etc., and even people radicalized Muslim youth from Europe, particularly Britain, France, Germany, Denmark, etc., as well as some from Canada and the U.S., and also from Australia. They have gone to Syria, led by this strange notion that they want to bring about a change in Syria. They want to, of course, impose a change on Syria from outside, and they have led to terrible, terrible crimes in Syria against the Syrian population, whether they are Muslims, Christians, Alawites, Druze, or any other groups of people that have lived in perfect harmony for decades in Syria, but unfortunately, as a result of the intrusion from outside, they have caused a lot of chaos, a lot of suffering, a lot of killings in Syria. So today, when we hear about fighting going on in Kobani, which is a Kurdish town, then the Americans are involved, and what they are trying to say to us is that they are trying to prevent Kobani from falling into the hands of these terrorist groups, the ISIS type of groups, and they are trying to help the Kurds to retain their autonomy in that region.
Well, now you're getting into some of the geopolitics of the area. There's alliances and factions that cross borders and things like that. Of course, the Turkish government is heavily involved in the situation in Syria, in a very negative degree, unfortunately. And I think we've talked about, or others have talked on this program, about material support that comes for groups like ISIL across the Turkish border. And there's also a lot of questions about what the approach of the Turkish government is towards this situation. But with all this discussion about what is happening in Kurdish communities, what is the Turkish government's role or engagement with Kurdish groups right now?
As far as the Turkish government is concerned, as you rightly pointed out, it has been supporting ISIS or ISIL right from the beginning. It has opened its borders to them. Turkish bases are used by ISIS fighters. The Turkish military and intelligence operatives are working with them closely. Turkey is used as a transit point for all of these foreign fighters to be smuggled into Syria. And Turkish opposition leaders have in the Turkish parliament said that Turkey is playing a very dirty role in facilitating the smuggling of these foreign mercenaries into Syria with the specific aim of destabilizing and ultimately planning to overthrow the government of President Bashar al-Assad. And even to this day, despite some pressure from the Americans who want to help the Kurds, because the Kurds are the Kurds in Syria are being used by the Americans to, in fact, break up Syria as well, because the Kurds occupy that portion of Turkey of Syria in northeast Syria, that if it were to become autonomous, and coupled with the fact that the Turkish President Erdogan has called for a no-fly zone to be imposed on eastern parts of Syria, that would then perhaps form a de facto ISIS state. And this is what Turkey is doing at the present time. And the other policy that Turkey is pursuing is that it wants to use one set of Kurds from Kobani, the Democratic Party of Kurdistan, to use them against the Kurdistan Workers' Party, so that these two groups of Kurds would fight against each other. They would weaken themselves, and then Turkey would use ISIS fighters to weaken the Kurds in Kobani, in and around Kobani, so that all around the Kurds would be weakened and they would not pose a serious challenge or threat to Turkey. So unfortunately, Turkey's role in this whole affair is very problematic. It is certainly not in any way in line with international law. It is certainly not in line with helping the Kurdish people, and it is certainly not helping the people of Syria either, because everything that Turkey has done up to the present time has caused more chaos, more mayhem, more killings in Syria, and unfortunately the price has had to be paid by the Syrian people and also by the Lebanese, because the fallout from this war on Syria has affected Lebanon also in a very serious way. And now, of course, we see also the people of Iraq.
It's really terrible to watch, to see the United States using one country against another, one ethnicity against another, sowing sectarian warfare in various ways. I mean, with all this talk about fighting a war on terror, you know, you've seen U.S. officials and newspapers talk about, well, what exactly is the U.S. giving to insurgents in Syria? What are we giving them? Just night vision goggles and medical equipment and other things, or are we also giving them weapons? Then you have these YouTube videos of U.S.-made rocket launchers in the hands of these Syrian rebels, as they're called. And you have the situation unfolding now with regard to Kurdish organizations. It's all very terrible to watch, and this disunity against a U.S. agenda that has been made very clear, which is They wanted to knock over Iraq, knock over Afghanistan, knock over Libya. They're trying to knock over Syria, and they want to knock over Iran once Syria is taken care of and if Hezbollah is taken care of. So this is what we're seeing. And there's some governments in the Middle East that are actually trying to fight terrorism or that have had major problems with terrorism. I'm thinking, for example, of Iran. We've discussed that on this program before, you and I. They've had problems with the MEK, MKO, funded from outside, organized from outside, given all sorts of shelter here in the West, in Canada, in Great Britain, in the United States in particular. You've got Syria, which has faced a veritable invasion of terrorists, tens of thousands of mercenaries, paid people, those have crossed borders. We've all seen it. Isn't it shocking that the United States won't even talk to Iran or Syria? They got this ISIL campaign going, and apparently, according to our political leaders, those guys are not going to be part of any solution.
You know, this is the problem, as you mentioned, that the two countries or two or three countries that can actually confront this threat of ISIS or ISIL terrorism, Iran and Syria together with Hezbollah, are not being included in this effort to confront this terrorist threat. But I'm not surprised. You see, the United States has been involved since 2005, April of 2005, and this has been admitted by The Washington Post, in an article that was published by Craig Whitlock in the Washington Post on April the 10th of 2011, in which he openly admitted that the U.S. has been involved in supporting Syrian opposition groups since 2005, and the U.S. has also been involved in supplying them weapons. In fact, U.S. policy has run on two tracks, on the political track as well as the military track. So the political track was to bring together Syrian opposition figures that were in exile, and the contact point for that was Elliot Abrams, who is an American neocon, who has been intimately involved in supporting Syrian opposition figures. Seymour Hersh has talked about this in his articles in the New Yorker magazine back in 2007. The Wall Street Journal has reported on these things. So there is ample evidence to indicate to us that the United States has been intimately involved both at the political level as well as at the military level in supporting Syrian rebels, so to speak, as they call them. But I would call them terrorists because of what they have done. And so it is not surprising that the U.S. would not involve the two countries that can actually fight their threat. The reason being that the United States is using the ISIS or ISIL threat as a pretext to get involved in Syria directly. Hitherto, they thought that if they were to supply weapons to these terrorist groups, that they would be able to overthrow the government of President Bashar al-Assad. But when they discovered earlier this year, particularly following the June 3rd elections in Syria, when the overwhelming majority of Syrian people voted for Bashar al-Assad, so the Americans had to change their approach to Syria. Now they are using the ISIL threat to get involved directly. And American military officials, top officials, for instance, General Martin Dempsey has openly said on September the 16th that if the current campaign of airstrikes does not succeed, then we may have to put boots on the ground. Now, when they talk about putting boots on the ground, what they are saying is that they want to get American military forces in the region. Now, we know that there are America's special operations forces already actively involved together with the CIA in Jordan, training these Syrian rebels. They are involved in Turkey in doing the same thing. and these airstrike campaigns in which, unfortunately, Canada is also involved, and it is now going to perhaps stretch into decades, if not more, and cause immense suffering to the people of the region, that a point would be reached where they would say, well, these airstrikes are not achieving the objective, so we have to put boots on the ground so that they can overthrow another government. And that government, of course, the target is the government of Bashar al-Assad in Syria, which is part of the resistance front. And the aim is that the resistance front has to be destroyed. That comprises Syria, Iran, Hezbollah, Hamas, etc., so that Israel can be protected. And this goes back all the way to September of 2011, when General Wesley Clark revealed that he had gone to the Pentagon, and a general at the Pentagon told him, this was on September the 20th of 2011, that he told him that the Pentagon brass has decided to take down seven countries in a period of 5 years. And these, of course, included Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, Iran, Sudan, Somalia, and, of course, Afghanistan. And we see what is happening in the region today is exactly according to that plan that was laid out by the Pentagon immediately in the aftermath of the attacks of September the 11th.
Well, you know, we've seen a lot of devastation, and I think, I mean, some of that agenda has been slowed down, but a number of the countries you mentioned there have been hit, regime changed, and so on, by the United States. So there has been move along that path. You know, if you really want to fight ISIL, you know, the logical thing to do would be to allow the Syrian government to operate, allow the Iraqi government to operate effectively. The U.S. hasn't even given it the air force that it was supposed to have given it, for example. But that's not what's happening. They're ignoring all the actors in the region who they do not wish to talk to, and they want to move in ground troops. You know, last year we had a lot of anti-war demonstrations. We said, you know, don't attack Syria. No one wants this. Don't start another war. And they had to back off for various reasons. But now they're coming in and they're trying a different strategy. And that strategy is, oh, we're not here to knock over Syria. We're just getting rid of ISIL. But we're not going to let this, you know, we're going to continue to demonize the Syrian government. And we're not going to talk to Iran. And we're going to demonize a whole lot of other people. And we're going to hit them with airstrikes. And if that's shown to be ineffective, we're going to bring in, you know, Western ground troops, NATO ground troops, or Turkish ground troops, which, correct me if I'm wrong, but that would be an extraordinarily dangerous development.
Oh, absolutely. I think the way this whole scenario is being worked out, it's working according to the neocon script. They are proceeding step by step, although they are facing setbacks, but their overall strategy remains the same. They may change their tactics in terms of achieving their objectives, but other than that, their program is on course. We witnessed this in Afghanistan, we witnessed this in Iraq, now in Syria, they tried it in Lebanon, and of course with Hamas in Gaza, for several attempts were made. But unfortunately, the U.S. and the neocons have not abandoned their plan. And we have seen, of course, Somalia is a failed state. Sudan has been divided. It may be further divided. So their project is on track in terms of destabilizing the entire Middle East region.
It's obvious that there's going to be many future developments. And as we know from the Bush years, the neoconservatives thrive upon chaos. Chaos and destruction in other countries or at home is seized upon to further enact their legislation. It's a vicious spiral, and they've mastered it to an art. So whatever feedback and consequences of their actions are used to justify further. I mean, look what happened with the case of Iraq. Okay, you were there. I was there in these anti-war demonstrations. Doug was there, our co-host, the executive of the anti-war movement. We warned what would happen if Iraq was invaded and attacked and if the government was destroyed. We said hundreds of thousands of people are going to be killed. We said the infrastructure of the country is going to be devastated and destroyed, that the health system would be destroyed, the education system would be destroyed, the water treatment and water distribution and electrical systems would be destroyed, that the country would be a complete mess and unable to recover, and that it would further destabilize the Middle East, and that many terrorists would be created by these actions, that many people would become very disaffected and upset and hopeless and so on, and that the conflict would spill over borders of Iraq into other countries. We said in Afghanistan that nothing would be achieved there, that the presence of Afghanistan is a place where the only real ground force is Afghans. And it's, you know, what happens in Afghanistan is based on what Afghans want to do, and that, you know, you're not going to be able to build Afghanistan into some kind of other different country. In fact, there's been very little construction of any kind under that occupation. You know, but with the Iraq situation and the targeting of countries like Libya and now Syria, you know, we said all these things would happen, including the growth of extremist organizations and so on. We were ignored by, you know, the establishment, we were told that Iraq would become like Switzerland. It would become this wonderful, highly democratic, very prosperous, rich country. It was an oil-rich country. They were going to do really well, and that American soldiers would be greeted with flowers and so on. You know, it sounds preposterous now. It sounds ridiculous, but this is what people were saying on TV, and now they're back as experts. They're back as terrorism experts, anti-terror consultants, Pentagon experts, general this and that, and these are the people that are still talking to us after one failed Iraq disaster, and now they're bringing us into a second one.
Yes, exactly. You know, that's exactly what all of us in the anti-war movement had said back in 2002 before Iraq was attacked, and we warned that it would be a catastrophe for the people, not only for the people of Iraq, but the entire region, that it would spawn more terrorists, and unfortunately, that's exactly what has happened. And it seems as if these warmongers have learned nothing from Iraq or Afghanistan, and they are going to repeat the same failed policies and impose them on Syria as well. They tried it in Libya. They said they were going to get rid of that dictator, Muammar Gaddafi, and look what they unleashed in Libya. The horrors. Now, you don't read about it at all in any of the newspapers. You don't hear about it on television anymore. Libya has become a completely forgotten place, whereas terrible, terrible things are happening in Libya. There is immense suffering of the Libyan people, but nobody cares about the Libyan people anymore. They just destroyed a country.
To use an overused phrase, Libya has disappeared down the memory hole. You know?
Exactly.
The U.S. is called the United States of Amnesia for a reason. And with this media now, this sort of 24/7 media that's giving us story after story, scare after scare, spectacle after spectacle, it's very difficult to remember something that happened, you know, 3 years ago in the case of Libya, because they don't want to remember what happened in Libya, because you can look at Libya and say, this is the future of any country that the United States attacks.
Exactly. And to just mention about Iraq, you know, Iraq had the best medical facilities and healthcare system in the entire Middle East. They had one of the best education systems in the entire Middle East. And today, there is no healthcare system to talk about. There is virtually no educational system to talk about. That country has been completely ruined, all as a consequence of the U.S. invasion and occupation of Iraq for more than 8 years. And any country that the Americans invade and occupy, that would be the fate of that country, as well as we have witnessed the fate of Iraq, of Afghanistan, of Libya, and now we are witnessing the same scenario being repeated in Syria.
Yes. Well, you know, our listeners can learn more about this by going to Crescent Online. What exactly is the website URL?
It's crescent-online.net.
Right, and you have there's many articles that appear there on a monthly basis.
Not only that, we put stories on a daily basis as well. So all breaking news, etc., we do provide our perspective. So we invite your listeners to go to our website, www.crescent-online.net.
Great. Wonderful. Well, we hope to be able to speak with you soon. I know that these unfortunate developments continue to occur, and there'll be a lot of commentary that's required. So thanks very much for taking the time with us and our listeners today.
It's my great pleasure, Brendan. Thanks, Zafar.
Bye-bye. And that was Zafar Bangash editing Crescent Online, which, as he pointed out, you can get at crescent-online.net.